Welcome to the official podcast for Triumvir Clio's School of Classical Civilization. I'm Beth, aka Triumvir Clio.
Hello again. I'm back, trying to get back into the rhythm of things. It's been busy. I don't know how we are this far into February. Today's chapter of the Bibliotheca is long, so we're going to dive right in. So here's Book 3, Chapter 15 of the Bibliotheca, translated by James George Fraser, likely with some revisions and interjections from yours truly. When Pandion died, his sons divided their father's inheritance between them, and Erechtheus got the kingdom, and Butes got the priesthood of Athena and Poseidon Erechtheus. Erechtheus married Praxithea, daughter of Phrasimus, by Diogenia, daughter of Cephisus, and they had sons, to wit, Cecrops, Pandorus, and Metion, and daughters, to wit, I love that little interjection, to wit, Procris, Creusa, Chthonia, and Orithia, who was carried off by Boreas. Chthonia married Butes, Creusa to married Zuthus, and Procris married Cephalus, the son of Daon. Bribed by a golden crown, Procris admitted Teleon to her bed, and being detected by Cephalus, she fled to Minos. Now, Minos fell in love with her and tried to seduce her. However, if any woman had intercourse with Minos, it was impossible for her to escape with her life, because Minos, you know, had a thing with many women. Pasiphae, his wife, bewitched him, so whenever he took another woman to his bed, he discharged wild beasts at her joints, and so these women perished. But Minos had a swift dog and a dart that flew straight, and in return for these gifts, Procris shared his bed, having first given him the Circean root to drink that he might not harm her. That comes out of nowhere. Afterwards, fearing the wife of Minos, understandably, she went to Athens and was reconciled to Cephalus and went forth with him to the chase, for she was fond of hunting. As she was in pursuit of game in the thicket, Cephalus, not knowing she was there, threw a dart, hit and killed Procris, and was tried in the Areopagus and condemned to perpetual banishment. I can say that for some reason. While Orithia was playing by the Ilissus River, Boreas carried her off and had intercourse with her, and she bore daughters Cleopatra and Chione, and winged sons Zetes and Calais. I don't know why the girls didn't get wings, just the boys. These sons sailed with Jason, and they met their end chasing the harpies, unless you ask Acusilas, who says they were killed by Heracles in Tenos. Cleopatra was married to Phineas and had two sons, Plexippus and Pandion. I don't know why I tried to give her daughters. Anyway, sons. When they had these sons, he married Idaea, daughter of Dardanus. So Phineas married two, and Idaea falsely accused her stepsons, Plexippus and Pandion, of corrupting her virtue. And Phineas believed her, blinded them both, like you do. But when the Argonauts sailed past with Boreas, they punished him. So I guess it all worked out well in the end. Chione had connection with Poseidon, which is an interesting way to describe it, and gave birth to Eumoplus, unknown to her father. And in order not to be detected, she flung the child into the deep. However, Poseidon picked him up and took him to Ethiopia and gave him to Benthesimi, a daughter of his own by Amphitrite, to bring up. So to an aunt. When he was full grown, Benthesimi's husband gave him one of his two daughters, but he tried to force his wife's sister, the other daughter, being banished on that account, he went with his son Ismarus to Tegiris, the king of Thrace, and got that king's daughter in marriage to his son. But afterwards, he was detected in a plot against Tegiris, so he fled to the Eleusinians and made friends with them. Now, later, on the death of Ismarus, he was sent for by Tegiris and went and composed his old feud with him and succeeded to the kingdom. So, you know, again, all worked out well for him. Anyway, war broke out between the Athenians and the Eleusinians, and he was called by the Eleusinians and fought on their side with a lot of Thracians. When Erechtheus inquired of the oracle how the Athenians might be victorious, the god answered that they would win the war if he would slaughter one of his daughters. Sound like, I don't know, a Trojan War or something. Anyway, so he opted for the youngest, so he slaughtered the youngest, but all of his other daughters also killed themselves, for, as some said, they had taken an oath amongst themselves to perish together. In the battle, which took place after the slaughter, Erechtheus killed Eumolpus. Eumolpus, I want that L to be after the P. Anyway, now, Poseidon, having destroyed Erechtheus and his house, Cecrops, the eldest son of Erechtheus, succeeded to the throne. He married Metiadusa, daughter of Eupolemus, and begat Pandion. Now, this Pandion, reigning after Cecrops, was expelled by the sons of Metion in a sedition, and going to Pelos at Megara, married his daughter Pelia. And at a later time, he was even appointed to the city, for Pelos slew his father's brother Bias and gave the kingdom to Pandion, while he himself repaired to the Peloponnese with a body of people and founded the city of Pelus. While Pandion was at Megara, he had sons born to him, to wit, Aegeus, Pallas, Nisus, and Lycus. But some say that Aegeus was a son of Scirius, but was passed off by Pandion as his own. Ooh. After the death of Pandion, his sons marched against Athens, expelled the Metianids, and divided the government in four. But still, Aegeus really had the whole power. The first wife whom he married was Meta, daughter of Hoples, and the second was Chalciope, daughter of Rexenor. As no child was born to him, he feared his brothers and went to Pythia and consulted the oracle concerning the beginning of children. The god answered him, "The bulging mouth of the wineskin, O best of men, loose not until thou hast reached the height of Athens." Not knowing what to make of the oracle, he set out on his return to Athens. And journeying by way of Troezen, he lodged with Pittheus, son of Pelops, who, understanding the oracle, made him drunk and caused him to lie with his daughter Aethra. But in the same night, Poseidon also had connection with her. I really think that's an interesting translation. Now, Aegeus charged Aethra that if she gave birth to a male child, she should rear it without telling whose it was. And he left a sword and sandals under a certain rock, saying that when the boy could roll away the rock and take them up, she was then to send him away with them. But he himself came to Athens and celebrated the games of the Panathenaean festival, in which Androgeus, son of Minos, vanquished all comers. Him Aegeus sent against the bull of Marathon, by which he was destroyed. But some say that as he journeyed to Thebes to take part in the games in honor of Laius, he was waylaid and murdered by the jealous competitors. But when the tidings of his death were brought to Minos, as he was sacrificing to the graces in Paros, he threw away the garland from his head and stopped the music of the flute, but nevertheless completed the sacrifice. Hence, down to this day, they sacrifice to the graces in Paros without flutes and garlands. But not long afterwards, being master of the sea, he attacked Athens with a fleet and captured Megara, then ruled by King Nisus, son of Pandion. And he slew Megaris, son of Hippomenes, who had come from Onchestus to the help of Nisus. Now, Nisus perished through his daughter's treachery, for he had a purple hair on the middle of his head, like all of my hair is purple right now, but he had just one purple hair. And an oracle ran that when it was pulled out, he should die. And his daughter Scylla fell in love with Minos and pulled out the hair. But when Minos had made himself master of Megara, he tied the damsel by the feet to the stern of the ship and drowned her. When the war lingered on and he could not take Athens, he prayed to Zeus that he might be avenged on the Athenians. And the city being visited with a famine and a pestilence, the Athenians, at first, in obedience to an ancient oracle, slaughtered the daughters of Hyacinth, to wit, Antheus, Aegleus, Lyteia, and Orothea, on the grave of Geraestus, the Cyclops. Now, Hyacinth, the father of the damsels, had come from Lacedaemon and dwelt in Athens. But when this was of no avail, they inquired of the oracle how they could be delivered. The god answered them that they should give Minos whatever satisfaction he might choose. So they sent to Minos and left it to him to claim satisfaction. And Minos ordered them to send 7 youths and the same number of damsels without weapons to be fodder for the Minotaur. Now, the Minotaur was confined in a labyrinth in which he who entered could not find his way out, for many a winding turn shut off the secret outward way. The labyrinth was constructed by Daedalus, whose father was Eupalamus, son of Matian, and whose mother was Alcippe. For he was an excellent architect and the first inventor of images. He had fled from Athens because he had thrown down from the Acropolis Talos, the son of his sister Perdix. For Talos was his pupil, and Daedalus feared that his talents might surpass himself. Seeing that he had sawed a thin stick with a jawbone of a snake, which he had found. But the corpse was discovered. Daedalus was tried in the Areopagus and, being condemned, fled to Minos. And there, Pasiphae, having fallen in love with the bull of Poseidon, Daedalus acted as her accomplice by contriving a wooden cow, and he constructed the labyrinth, to which the Athenians every year sent 7 youths and as many damsels to be fodder for the Minotaur. So many stories. I'm trying to decide where even to begin. Minos keeps showing up in this chapter. The story of Daedalus and the labyrinth is well trod, so I'm going to leave that one be, at least for now. It's the early part of this chapter that stands out to me. All these women, so many women. I'm trying to picture the Minos of it all. He discharges wild beasts at their joints, at their joints. That's, I'm sure it's a translation thing, but I don't speak Greek, so it's not like I can go to the source to see if there might be a better word or phrase that makes more sense in non-Victorian English. Okay, 1920 isn't really a Victorian age, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, all I can picture is tiny little beasts that attack her knees and elbows. It's a weird curse. I don't totally blame Pasiphae for trying to keep her husband from cheating on her. The fact that her curse impacts the other women and not Minos is problematic, but I can see where she's coming from. It's very Hera of her. But a curse that makes him sick wild beasts on the women he slept with? I mean, damage is already done. You do have to pause and think about what the Athenians really thought of Crete. We have this story of Minos, and then we have Pasiphae falling in love with a bull, managing to get pregnant, and then giving birth to the Minotaur. And in the middle, we have this story about Minos tying Scylla to the stern of his ship so that she drowns. Not that any of this is historical, but there is the adage about history being told by the victors. So we know that these stories tend to come from mainland Greece, from Athens, likely. What does that say about how people thought about Crete? Back when this was all just an oral tradition, before any of this was written down, what did the people telling these stories about this foreign place really, really think about Crete? And were the stories the women told the same? I wonder what the women said about Pasiphae as they sat at their looms. How did she appear in their songs, the ones that were never written down? What do you think? Pop over to the blog and share. It's at triumvirclio.school.blog. I'll be back next month with the final chapter in Book 3 of the Bibliotheca. Not really the end of the Bibliotheca. There's another whole section, but it's that we will finish Book 3 next month. I'll talk to you then.
You can join the discussion of this and everything covered in this podcast by following the link in my show notes. And if you're enjoying what you've heard so far, please consider supporting the show with a monthly donation of your choosing, just like public radio. And please also consider giving a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice so that more people can discover the fun that is Triumvir Clio's School of Classical Civilization.